you go through the safety switch loop, and they're all electrical switches that are either normally open or normally closed. For instance, a pressure switch is normally open. It's not closed unless there's water pressure, so then it'll close. Same with limit switches. They're normally closed, and if they overheat hot water inside the exchanger, it's going to open, disconnect the electrical circuit. So this is where we were talking about a voltmeter is important, because you can just go through each switch and like determine, is my pressure switch open or closed? It's closed. Okay, not my pressure switch. And then you just go from switch to switch, and it's really easy to determine issues with those when you have diagnosed several in the past and you're in and out.
This is episode 179 with Pat Burke of Pulling Around. Enjoy.
Welcome to your go-to podcast for the pool and spa industry. My name is Tyler Rasmussen.
And my name is Greg Giafania. And this is the Pool Chasers Podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Pat. Appreciate you taking the time to be with us here in the Pool Chaser studio. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How you doing? Appreciate the opportunity. It's, you know, great to be here.
Yeah, I've seen the pulling around whip around the Mesa distribution. How's work these days? Staying busy?
Yeah, it's hard to keep up, really. I mean, do a little bit of everything. So it's been, I guess, a gift this whole last year, as for a lot of people. You know, it's been the wildest year, but also one of the busiest.
Yeah, most definitely. And I was actually with a good friend everybody knows, Justin Bowie of J-Max. And he was like, oh, you know, Pat? And I was like, no, should I? He was like, yeah, you should. That dude like knows heaters automation like nobody's business. So that is a huge, huge compliment coming from Justin. So I was like, oh, that's what we got to do, Ty. We got to hit this dude up and get him in here. And then we go down the rabbit hole and find out that you're this awesome BMX rider. And I was like, oh, thank God. This is going to make for a great conversation. So why don't you share with the listeners, you know, just your story. Where are you from? How'd you get into BMX riding? And even more, like, you BMX in swimming pools.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Tucson originally, and born and raised. I actually moved to Phoenix about 7 years ago, give or take. But BMX has been a long, ongoing process in my life. It's just started with jumping dirt, you know, dirt jumps, and going to skate parks. And then, of course, like, seeing, like, the empty pools and people doing that. It was just coincidental that, like, I got into that. And then, you know, first picked up a pool pole in Tucson, and just they went hand in hand. I mean,
what'd you see first, an empty pool for the bike or for work?
Like, which one? Oh, for the bike. I was like 15. It was like right next to the neighborhood park, and kids were skating in it, and we rode our bikes in it. So it was.
I'm just curious, were you a kid that was good at making dirt jumps? Because I sucked really bad at making dirt. Like, the dirt jumps where you're like, oh, yeah, this shit is legit, and you just went right through it. Oh, like, yeah. Oh, man, am I too heavy? Or what products do I need here, man?
No, I was pretty good at it, I guess. I mean, it was really dependent on weather in Arizona, because, like, if there was rain, you could make mud, and mud can make a jump. We can form a lip. But
that don't happen very often.
No, yeah, that's the thing. So
that, like, rain don't come here.
All the great often. Dirt jumping areas are like Pacific Northwest or like Pennsylvania or something, where like it's just moist and they can build these miraculous trails. So Arizona was difficult on that. That's probably one of the reasons why, like, we started seeking other thrills, you know, like empty pools or ditches or whatever. So it's kind of funny how it all came together, and now I'm a pool pro.
Yeah. So. Well, you know what? I've known a lot of BMX riders over the years. I actually grew up in Vegas for quite a few years, and I actually lived right next to TJ Lavin and Kerry Hart and all those guys. So you'd see Nyquist and all those dudes over there just going crazy. Got the backyard paradise of dirt jumps back there. But there were, you know, all the other BMX riders that I was surrounded with, they were always like very like technical. You know what I mean? And it's funny that we're going to be talking about some technical pool things, but just technical, artistic, all of these different things, and just always had a ton of respect for the BMX riders. As long as they weren't at the skate park I was at the time, because I did skate. So I was like, hey, could you get the pegs? Like, man, you just do so much work on our shit. You know, it makes it a little bit more difficult for a skateboard to roll over.
Yeah. Yeah. No bikes.
Yeah. No, no bikes, no scooters, no, just skate park.
You did start to see those signs quite a bit after a while, like no bikes.
Yeah.
I think the skaters probably put them up themselves, though. Probably.
Well, when the scooters came into play, everybody was just more scooter. like, I think that's where the bikers and the skaters got along, because it was just like the scooters took over. You're just like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, at least the bikes and skateboards are cut from like the same cloth.
Yeah,
the scooters were just like an invasion. So,
fair enough. Invasion.
Yeah. So, you know, do you remember what your first bike was? Because we've talked about this quite a few times on this podcast.
It was a Free Agent limo, and then followed quickly by an S&M Holmes.
Oh.
Those are the bikes. And
hey, you went right into like good bikes. Did you, somebody in your family ride bikes?
No. Really what prompted the whole thing was just transportation. You know, like I skated for some time when I was younger. I'm talking like middle school, and getting a bike was like, oh, I can ride around now. I no longer have to skate somewhere or walk somewhere or ask for a ride. Like I'd just ride my bike. So
yeah. You ride your bike to the skate park to skate on your skateboard.
Yeah, skate. Yeah.
We did that for a while. It's too far to skate because it sucks rolling over all those bumps. And then just so you just ride your bike to the skate park and then you skate.
That was all you talked about when you were walking around town with your board as a kid, was like, man, I can't wait to turn 16 and have a car.
Yeah.
Like because it just gets like old after a while. You just want to be at the skate park and have like broken trucks and stuff like on the way to the park.
Yeah.
And there's like nothing worse than like breaking a kingpin or something. And it's just like, well, have fun watching everybody.
Right.
Yeah. No kidding.
And that stuff was expensive back then too. It's a little bit cheaper now. Yeah. Way expensive. No. At least when you're 10, it is.
When I first got my first car at like 21. So I was on the bike for the whole time. And I really wouldn't have any other way. Like it was an outlet. It was an experience. Like I didn't need a car, I guess, at that point. So
I don't know. A lot of people that are born and raised in Tucson. Is that it? How is that scene down there then?
Oh gosh.
Picture, lots of homies, I'm sure.
Picture like a huge mesa, like the not so good part. Like Apache and Broadway Mesa. So I mean it was a good fun time, but part of the reason why I moved up here was just to like excel at work. Mm. You know, like there's not a huge pool industry for high end pools. There's not automation. I mean, when I did see pools with heaters, like they hadn't run in, years. So in the service trade, like you were kind of stuck to like the simple stuff, like, oh, my motor went out, we need a shaft seal, replumb a pump. Like, so your service calls were much, much simpler, you know, like, and running a route was basically all I had down there, just a route and minor repair. Moving up here, you know, everything's so much nicer and so much bigger, and there's huge homes and there's huge pools and lots of issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What got you to riding in pools? Because that's a completely different experience, and that's not something that's readily available all the time, you know?
Honestly, just like by random. Just in Tucson, there's lots of empty houses, lots of pools around. And like I said, the first one I ever rode was like right next to the city park, right there, just like open. Like you just couldn't miss it as a kid. And so you'd see people skating in it. I actually saw that first pool in a Thrasher magazine in a photo, and it just like fueled it. And I was like, oh man, like that's the one next to the park. And it sparked like that interest to like search for more, get out there and find it and do it. And like it just turned into like a odd hobby. It's developed into like, this has been years since I've been in there, but like people would travel from all over the country and world, France and Spain and Canada in particular. I've had all people come to ride in like the Southwest states. Like, so.
Oh, wow. You guys are cool. Mobbing deep.
Yeah, really. We had like a session in LA. I think it was, we had like some term we coined it. It was like an international tour, because there was like Australia, Canada, Spain and France and US. It's like all at a pool in LA and like the Hollywood Hills.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Some abandoned pool up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's still there. It's been there for a long time, but it's, an experience like that. And like, then we shoot photography and like video and film. And so it's.
And that's the best spot to do it, man. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about finding those random pools too, it's such a treasure. There's a handful of times that it find like the random pool. Worked at a military base in the middle of nowhere, and probably 10 miles from there, there was another like abandoned Air Force base, and there was a swimming pool there, and nobody knew about it. And me and a few buddies, one was a BMX rider and another one was a skater. And it was the coolest thing to come up on and just shred it. And especially I love when it rained, because it would form like that puddle of water in the deep end. And if you knew what you're doing, you could cut around it.
Cut around it, yeah.
First time, I did not know. Fell right in it. There's a video out there somewhere. Have you
ever... Those are some of the funniest videos ever, man. People falling in pools.
Oh, yeah.
Nasty water.
But it's a ton of fun. It's a different experience than being at a park. It's just... And I think it makes for some of the coolest photos. So anybody listening, go check out, what's your Instagram handle that where all your bike photos are at?
It's my first and last name, but it's got, I think, two underscores. It's like Pat, two underscores, Burke, and then a third underscore.
Yeah.
Just to form my first name and last name. But check
your
it out.
Photos are so rad. So yeah, rad.
So it's funny. It's kind of like a hidden side, because I'm in the professional world, like working on pools, and like some people might think like, oh, this is wild. Like, who is this dude? And then especially to like, you know, end up in advanced situations in some of these high end pools and like be at the neighbor's house, like sneaking over the wall to, to ride the pool.
So, yeah. Work on my pool. Don't have me come out here and have you riding your bicycle in my pool.
But anything in the last probably 20 years isn't something we're searching for. It's all the old 1970s bowl style kidney bean pool. You know, at work you go and you're like, okay, like this thing's 5 feet deep, play pool with a Baja shelf and a bar. And you're like, this isn't the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I'm jealous of a bike in that, the drains. Cause man, I would eat shit on the, like, if you didn't have like concrete to like, you know, patch up the drain, like the cover wasn't on there. It's just like a hole. Mm-hmm. Like a bike can go over that, but a skateboard, not so well.
Yeah.
Not so well.
A stolen street sign.
Oh,
oh, there you go.
That's what you see, you know,
on the videos. Yeah.
Nice and smooth right over it. Yeah. Yep. None of us were that smart. So anyway, maybe next time, next life. So is that where the name of the pool company,
Pooling Around, comes from? The company is Pooling Around, and basically is just, if you look up that hashtag on Instagram, you'll probably find skateboarders. And and like, it was just a perfect opportunity to, you know, when I branched off and started my own routes, I was like, well, whatever, you know, like, what else am I going to call it? So it identifies me, in addition to, it's just kind of funny pun. A lot of homeowners that have no clue, just, they'd love it. They just laugh.
So cute.
Pretty exactly. And then sometimes I'm just like, oh God, like, adorable, huh?
It's not cute. It's raw. It's perfect. Listen to my episode on Pool Chasers. You'll know more.
Yeah. So now the title is out and people know why. So a lot of people don't. So it's just kind of funny. It was kind of just an inside joke with the friends, and then, you know, whatever. Like, I just didn't know what else to call it too. So sent it.
We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, Pat shares with us how he got into the industry, how the pool industry is a secret gold mine, and how it has opened all of our minds to see the different niche opportunities that are out there.
Hey, pool pros, my name is Bryce Sarine.
And I'm Zach Singer, and we're with Beyond Pool Cleaning in Scottsdale, Arizona, and this is your Skimmer Tip of the Week. This year has been rough on all of us, especially when it came to chems.
Yeah, between sourcing and changing prices, we are really fortunate to be a little ahead of the curve. Using Skimmer for the last few years really gave us an edge, allowing us to pull great data.
Like reviewing the chemical dosage report with the company summary for all of last summer, it was unreal to have the exact information from last year to prep for this year, before the homeowners started buying up all the chems.
Yeah, the forecast let us prepare, but also having all of the up-to-date costs input into Skimmer as the prices kept increasing really helped us keep our finger on the pulse of our business.
I know some people charge for their chems, so this report's a lifesaver. But even for our business, where we include chemicals, We need to use it to adjust the rates of our customers before they become unprofitable for us. The Skimmer Profit Report is crucial for this.
We could do a whole hour podcast on the profit report by itself, but for just a quick tip, I would say take your time to make sure all of your costs are entered correctly under the chemical dosages and under the rates and labor and revenue.
Skimmer can do all the calculations for you, but the information it pulls is only as good as the information you put in. So take the extra time this winter to prepare.
Just another way Skimmer helps us balance the budget in our favor.
To find out more, check out episodes 138 and 154 of the podcast, or go to getskimmer.com/poolchasers. That's getskimmer.com/poolchasers.
So how did you kind of transition, you know, pulling around pools to pushing a pole?
Well, I mean, I got my first job cleaning a route at a company in Tucson, and gosh, I was probably only like 19 or 20. Mm. And really from then till now, I'm 34, has just been, I've been a pool professional for trade. And it's just gone from cleaning a route at that same first company, I took a pay cut to become a repair guy, which at that point it was like $8 a pool or $11 an hour for repair tech, which that'll put it in perspective, like how long ago that was.
For sure.
And, you know, I started out with just like basics, like, let's go, you're going to go do DE filter services and filter cleans. And I did that for like a year, you know, like change a motor here or there, change a shaft seal, like, and I just progressed. I had a mentor that is a owner now in Tucson, Ron Roxbury, who just basically shot me trips of the trade and, you know, show me the ropes. Like, these are your seals, these are your plumbing aspects, like, you know, worked me in slowly, basically. So, moving up to Phoenix.
Did you like it?
Yeah. I mean, at that time I was like struggling finding like anything, 'cause I was like working at like restaurants or like phone rooms, and I'm like, well, this isn't for me. Like, what do I do? And going into like pools was like, I'm outside, like I can run a route. They basically hired me on with like no experience, saying like, you know how to use tools from probably just like working on my bike. And they're just like, oh, you can use a ratchet set. Like, you can pull a motor apart.
How'd you find out that people actually service pools?
Just a friend of mine actually just said like, hey, like, I don't know, this guy's hiring. Like, it was just word of mouth.
I never put those two and two together. Even we grew up with a pool and all that stuff. We never had a pool guy, but like started the business. I was like, I don't even know people like did this, that this was like a real trade.
It's like a secret.
It is.
It's a secret. And when you become good at it, it's like a gold mine, because when you find tasks that nobody's been able to do since the pool has been constructed, like people are like, oh my God, you're the guy. Like, they never lose your phone number, you know? So, but yeah, it's going back to where I was like struggling. I was like trying to apply for like plumbing or like electrician or something. And like, they wouldn't hire, and they're like, oh, no experience. Like, we're not going to just train you.
Right.
So going into pools, it was, they were willing to train. Mm-hmm.
So did you have a lot of responsibilities when you first got into pools?
Like, in terms of responsibilities? Like,
yeah. 'Cause I guess what I'm thinking here is, if you're young, you don't have kids, you don't have maybe a lot of bills or car payments, maybe just a bike payment. I don't know. That you can actually kind of enjoy, you know, developing your skills in the trade, and you can get good at it, where it's much more difficult. When you've got all these bills that you got to pay and all these responsibilities, and you're just, you know, wanting things to happen, you know, right here and now, but taking advantage of, you know, just kind of learning when you're younger.
No, I had like almost no responsibilities.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, like 19, 20 and roommates at a place. So that was basically my only expense, like splitting the bills anyway. So, and that was part of just like BMX. Like, we always had like bike houses where we just like room up and go on trips and like not have worries or any responsibilities, especially at 19. So no, because that would be a heavy weight. And that was recently a heavy weight on my shoulders for like branching off and starting my own brand and company, because I was at a salary somewhere, and that was hard to just, okay, here we go. I do have the mortgage. I do have the car payment. I do have the stuff now. And starting your own business was like the most terrifying thing I've ever done. that was difficult.
So how long did you clean pools in Tucson then? Or how long did you work there?
Gosh, probably like 3 or 4 years. Okay. And then I eventually started a route there. And
on your own?
Mm-hmm. Started on my own there, but much easier at that same point in my life because I had less responsibilities. So I could start a route and it was just like 10 or 12 pools. It was like built up real quick. And I think I ended up with like one employee and like 120 accounts or something in Tucson.
That's pretty good. Tucson.
Yeah. I mean, they're, you know, all basic, $90 pop pools, you know, and it got me through the recession 2008. Like everyone was struggling and I was cleaning pools.
Yeah.
It's foolproof, like, you know.
Yeah, just like you said, man, it's like a hidden gold mine. That I think we're all kind of sometimes, I think it's getting less of that now, but they ask, people ask you what you do, you know, oh, I'm running a pool company or I do this. And it's kind of like a weird, they don't look at it like as something like a doctor, you know, well, that's a way up there, but you know, they don't look at it as like a professional job. It's like, oh, you're just cool. You're a pool guy. But I know a lot of pool guys that make a lot more money than most people that we see. It's like
that scene from Meet the Parents where Owen Wilson's like, that's so awesome. I would love to give back to the community and do some charity work. And it's like, no, well, I get paid. So,
yeah. You know. But it is, man. It's interesting to see the reaction on people's faces sometimes. And you're like, yeah, I probably make more money than you too. You know, it's like, you just don't know. It's such a, it's such an interesting industry.
To be honest, once I got into the pool business, it actually opened my eyes to seeing that there are like jobs in everything. Like, yeah, sure. We didn't see this, but it's like, you know, there's a big business in this microphone and all these little mechanisms and this stand and, you know, all these things. You know, we've got, you know, we've got a bunch of whatever the hell hedges on our walls. Like, there's somebody balling out of control.
I know,
you know, making these
made
things.
The fake hedges.
Yeah. You just don't think about that. But yeah, the pool industry, it's a hidden gem.
One thing I've seen that's just to touch on that is like going to like some of the super high-end houses, PV area, like you'll be one of 16 different services there at one time. And you look around, you're like, these dudes are doing the landscape, groundskeepers are here, they're doing the windows, they're cleaning, I'm doing the pool, they got a plumber and HVAC dude around the corner setting everything up for our high roller that's going to roll in
town
next weekend. Yep. And like this thing's perfect. And so you look around and you're like, everybody here is self-employed, you know, or a family business with a couple of different employees maybe, but like, I mean, we have the market and if you provide a service, like someone pay.
Yep. And like, I always found that when I used to clean windows, you said windows, that's how I first started out in trades, but I cleaned up windows up in like Cape Creek for 2 years at these super high end properties out there. Mm-hmm. But it was always like the same thing. I was there with like 12 different trades or different people, and it was so cool because, you know, it's like this big baller, like you said, is rolling in that doesn't even probably know any of the company names, but the property managers got it all running pretty cool. It's interesting that market. That's definitely different. And you I think you deal with more property managers and stuff, the stuff you do, but it's it's definitely a cool kind of thing where you're just hanging out with tradespeople doing different stuff.
It just opens my eyes to like self-employment. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's like goes the college route. And then, I mean, you said windows, like you could start a window washing business and what, charge $100 per pop or just fictitious, like do 10 a day,
right?
6 a day, 5 a day, 5 days a week. And then you're like, well, that corporate salary is kind of getting crushed here by cleaning windows. Right. And that's very similar to like pool service. Like you, without doing any technical work, you can go and run a route and, you know, you're 30, $50 per pool for every 30 minutes adds up quickly.
Right.
You know,
it's just funny perspective. You said earlier, you know, it's about people are too prideful. You know, it's like, they just don't want to be out in the heat or whatever and do the hard work, but there's a lot of money there.
It's funny just going into business though, you get greedy and you start doing this basic math where it's like $100 a pool, man, I could be making X amount a week. And it's like, you get into it and you start figuring out that there's like cost of fuel.
Oh God.
There's you know, maybe some overhead cost when you chemicals. Get into office. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh man, I think I make like $5 a pool. Maybe I think.
Yeah. Pool service is difficult right now for sure. But just the, the revenue stream. And then when you've got the revenue stream going, you got those expenses paid for it, and then you can tackle the projects where you can make more money. But yeah, and I think pool services in general in the Valley is due for like a double.
Yeah.
Like a huge increase. Cause like when you say you're $100 a month and then all your expenses tally up and you're like, oh God, what do we make? $10 for this pool?
Right.
You know, it's not worth it. And so, I mean, everybody's probably going to need to do a big bump.
Yeah. I think we're starting to see that somewhat. Like the average pool, I think, is now like 140 or something, which is, what, you know, 2 years ago was $100. So that's good, but we got to get higher than that, I think, for sure.
Yeah. I got some friends in, you know, East Coast where pools are not as frequent. And
right.
It's like $400.
Yeah.
Just for a dude to show up and like get your leaves out.
Yeah, I think in Texas it's the same as like 260 or something. Like for it's huge, basic pools, they're spread out more, right? You know, it's 20-minute drives between pools, maybe.
Sure.
A little different market. But yeah, it's definitely due in the Valley for sure. But I think what's unique about what you do, and I think we've seen this more often now, is that you create your own kind of niche of stuff, and that this industry, and most industries, like that's out there, right? You don't have to do things the same way everybody else did it. And I think what you do is pretty cool as far as offering some type of service that most people can't get to that level or don't want to, or whatever it is. You know, like, you know, we do filter clean stuff. There's a lot of different random niches that you can fill voids for that people just don't want to do or don't have time to do. Or like you said, most of the time you'll walk somebody through and they'll just be like, yeah, that's cool, I get it, but you know, when can you come do it? Right. Like,
yeah,
they don't, they want to know it, but don't want to do the work or whatever. But so it's pretty cool that there's these little niches, I think, where you can make even more money or even more, like, you know, prestige, like by creating this avenue for yourself like that.
Totally. The service is just like the rapport, and then the work, whatever it may be, is like where you make the the profit. Considering like when it's a multi-heater system or automated and there's like 9 pumps, like something's going to be wrong, like every month, right? You know, like it really will be. And, you know, there's just some reason to come and fix something outside of the means of cleaning the pool. Mm-hmm. So you got the base rate, and then, you know, like some of these places with like 20 lights, like one's out all the time. And if they want to keep their pool perfect, like, between the system and the lights, like something's just gonna go.
Yeah.
So
it's a recurring revenue stream, man.
That
it literally is just, if you take care of the pool properly and you know what you're looking for, like it's always broken.
It really is. It really is. Especially when you go into a property that like someone's been servicing, but then they're not familiar with the equipment or like repairs or anything. Like you just know, it's like,
yeah,
you just clean up because they're walking past like the old electrical tower that's just crumbling. The switches and the GFI and everything's just open. And you're like, well, they replaced the pump last year, but like everything else is crumbling.
Right. So it's a lot there, man.
Yeah, it
home
is.
Home warranty for you.
Yeah, 100%.
Maybe. They don't do the whole pump, though. They just got the motor and the...
What you got was this brand new jacuzzi pump.
They just do the leaks with the freaking Christie's blue glue everywhere.
Yeah, on the outside.
Yeah.
Duct tape.
You mentioned you started in some motors and basic filter cleans and stuff. So what sparked your interest, I guess, on growing that knowledge?
I think just boredom. Like cleaning pools, like I did it for a while and I was just like, this is, I'm doing the same thing. I go to the same house and it's going to be the same tree. And, you know, you just know, like, I'm going to have to vacuum this property. And you just, and so, and just like, interest just in how things work, really. And ultimately, like I said earlier, I took a pay cut to do it, and it was, you know, the best decision of my life, because with that decision, when expenses were low, I learned something that I could apply when I moved up here. And then from that point, grew and just taught myself and networked with everyone on like how it all works, you know. But that was the spark, you know, just boredom, I think. Trying not
to. It's got to be the most difficult challenge of pool service for anybody, for everybody. It's just the monotony of over and over every week, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, and when you were, go ahead.
Especially with the same nasty tree or something. Yeah. It's just like,
That's a challenge, right? I mean, you get people that are good at cleaning pools, but they don't want to clean pools for more than probably 2 years because just get bored. There's so much more out there. Like, yeah. So
what I've learned is if the pool has a nickname, there's definitely something wrong with it. Like if you're new,
you say,
oh, this is Swan Pool. That can't be good. No matter how cute the name is, something about it is not good.
Yeah, that pool sucked. We had this giant pool in PV that we called Swan Pool because it had swans in it, but it was
should have been called Scumbag.
Yeah, it's the worst. it's how we started training people or seeing if people could actually do their job. Like, oh, take them to Swan Pool and see if they can actually clean it. And we would go clean it with them and still take three dudes like 45 minutes. It's rough.
Yeah, those are brutal.
So I'm going to go dump my net, never come back.
Just a net in the street.
And yeah.
An Uber receipt.
Yeah.
Exactly. Uber receipt. Yeah. Thanks, boss.
We're going to take another quick break. When we get back, we dive into how Pat's education has evolved over the years, common problems with heaters, how his phone has become one of his most important tools, and why he goes above and beyond on service calls.
This episode of the Pool Chasers podcast is brought to you by Leslie's. As a pool service professional, it's important to have the right partners. Leslie's values the important work you do to serve your local communities, and they want to help. With the new Leslie's Pro Partner Program, you can take advantage of the benefits only Leslie's has to offer. As a member of the program, you will get customer referrals and wholesale pricing. Additionally, you can take advantage of Leslie's extended hours during the week and on the weekends. When we are running Brothers Pool Service, we often use Leslie's when we needed supplies, especially on the weekends, and since they have over 900 locations, they were convenient to get to. They also offer free in-store services like water testing and cleaner repair. To learn more, check out episode 151 of the podcast or stop by your local Leslie's store today to sign up for the program. This episode of the Pool Chasers podcast is also brought to you by Primate Pool Tools. All right, by now you've heard us talk about our friends at Primate Pool Tools, right? All their poles are made with aerospace-grade carbon fiber, which offers 10 times the strength of aluminum at half the weight. This allows you to cut through the water with ease. They have options for any level of commercial and residential maintenance with multiple models of poles to choose from, as well as an extension system that can extend the reach of any pole up to 40 feet. Primate Pool Tools continues to lead the way in carbon fiber technology by now offering stainless steel version of their flagship 2X and 3X models that are ideal for heavy vacs, as well as custom limited edition designs and brand new custom grips. All the Primate poles are handmade in the USA, come with a 1-year commercial warranty, and most importantly, top-notch customer service. Right now, you can get $20 off your order by using Pool Chasers 2021. That's Pool Chasers 2021 at checkout. And make sure to listen to episode 104 or click the link below for more information.
So how has, you know, your education evolved over the years? I mean, do you remember sort of this defining moment where it's like you learn some basic things about electrical where you're like, oh, this makes sense. You know, it's kind of like, skateboarding or riding a BMX bike. There's like that gateway trick that it allows you to like understand that things are possible.
Mm-hmm. I think one of those breakthrough moments for me was like buying my first meter. I bought like a Fluke. I think it was like a T105. And it's like an amp clamp meter. And like, I just remember like not knowing what it did, but wanting to know, and then applying it to like a motor. Like, okay, so I have my voltage here, like my motor's on. And what is my amperage through the circuit? Getting that gave me the motivation to like learn more. I'm like, I don't understand this meter. What does it do? And so then I'd spend time like researching like basic electrical or like asking the guys around me, like, what does this do? How can I apply this? In Tucson, when I was at that first company, you know, the guys, the lead techs, like, had meters and manometers and, like, things. And I was just like, oh, it was like, what is that? So when I got my first one, it was, like, probably, like, the breakthrough to, like, what can I do with this?
So you've never had an issue asking questions. You know, we were talking about that, you know, before we started the podcast, is that there's a lot of people that, you know, don't know things, but they don't ask.
Yeah. No, I haven't had a problem. Like, I just want to soak up information like a sponge. Like, at previous companies, like, I would try and learn, like, as much as I could. And if I didn't know, I would reach out to someone who did know, you know. And in the pool industry, like, obviously, your local reps and the tech support line. Like, I've called that thing so many times, like for years, and there's always something new, even to this day. Like, it's, I'll be on with Pentair tech support and like trying to figure something out, and I'm asking questions. It's just, there, the information's out there. You just have to find it.
And it's funny, I think a lot of people think that they're putting people out that are knowledgeable about things, but I've learned that, me personally, if there's anything that I do well, I love helping people. I like helping people that genuinely want to learn and want to pay attention and want to apply it. You know, it's like fulfilling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and I think there's a lot of other people like yourself that would love that. You know, if you reach out and kind of walk through something, I mean, not take advantage of somebody, there's, right, there's completely different, you know what I mean? But, you know, not being afraid to just like reach out to people and, you know, buy them lunch, you know, pay for their time. What, I don't know, whatever, you know, it might be, but a lot of people are willing to help.
Sure. Sure. But then there's also a lot of people that are being paid to help. You know, there's all the tech support and the reps and your boss, or, you know, so like I utilize those outlets before I typically even call the friends up and I'm like, dude, I'm puzzled. Like, what do I do? And I mean, like, I've learned majority of my stuff through tech support.
Really?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like just being in the field, having a problem, calling tech support.
Yeah. Not knowing what the heck I'm looking at and then trying to figure it out. Between a manual, tech support, YouTube, or Google. And then, like, you know, ultimately, like, the local reps are, like, the best because they can say, hey, like, hey, your voltmeter's in your hand. Like, put it to these two pins. Like, what's going on? You know, and you can describe to them in person better than, like, reading a manual or, like, trying to describe, to, like, a scenario to, like, a call center tech support who may only understand, you know, the Screen Logic app or something, and they don't really get, no, you know, more into the electrical aspects or like how the pool is designed.
So what would you recommend? So, you know, we are in heater season. There's all kinds of, it's probably a good time to know a little bit about heaters or figure things out, cause it's kind of hard to get heaters right now. But what would you recommend to somebody that's new? What should you know? And what should you have, when troubleshooting a heater? Because there's probably some tools. You should probably know your parts to a certain degree, mm-hmm, so that when you're talking to tech support, maybe you should have a manual. So you might not be able to remember these things, but, you know, at least you can communicate correctly.
Yeah, for sure. With the heater, you need tools for sure. You need a voltmeter and you need a manometer and then just basic hand tools, you know.
You recommend a brand of a meter?
I like Fluke or Fieldpiece. I think I have a Fieldpiece manometer. They're all HVAC tools. So a basic meter, basic stuff will work. You can buy an Amazon like brand manometer. I think one of the first ones I had was like $40. You know, it'll tell you what you've got with as far as gas pressure. You can get a voltmeter from Home Depot for cheap. Even like Harbor Freight will have like some super cheap voltmeters. Like you can go apply yourself for very cheap. You know, you don't have to go out and buy like a $500 voltmeter. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what are some of the hand tools that usually you'd need to have on you?
Just basic screwdrivers, nut drivers, socket set, impact wrench, all the sizes, you know, to get into your appliance. Allen keys. I mean, pretty standard stuff, really. Yeah.
Do you usually keep like all like manufacturer manuals on you or?
No, I just have a phone and I'll save a lot of them to my home screen just so I can access them quickly or offline. Just Google it. Yeah, and just Google it. Yeah, save them offline because sometimes you're in Silver Leaf and there's no service and you're like, okay, how am I going to get support? I don't have cell service. I can't call anybody. I don't have a manual. So I'll save them to my home screen.
That's a good idea.
So what's a recent heater repair that you've done? Anything noteworthy you've done lately?
Noteworthy, sure. Yeah, I went through one scenario where this is pretty complex. There's a, you have to picture the design. There's a pool with a perimeter overflow edge, and three of the edges are like 9 feet to 12 feet tall. So it's huge. And so with this there's aeration, pH aeration, so the pH rises. And then inside the heater, higher temperatures in the exchanger cause calcium to precipitate inside the exchanger, and it clogged the exchanger. Did a new exchanger, 9 days later it failed. Same thing, all from high pH. So solution to that was adding chem feeder and obviously maintaining pH levels. But it was just insane how aeration caused such a huge spike in pH. This pool we maintain, and it's usually about 15 gallons of acid through a chem feeder a week and 50 pounds of bicarb to just keep this within reason. Wow. All because it destroys heaters. Literally insane. And
I mean, at a point, is it worth it to have that feature? I mean,
it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely stunning. You know,
I just mean like the aeration. I mean, is there any other way to keep it clear?
Turn the negative edge off.
Yeah, exactly. Which is not an option because that's the backyard's feature.
Yeah.
You literally go out and that is the backyard. I don't know. I've heard some people say you can stabilize borates, alkalinity, and it might help with that, but I've never tried. That's a avenue I've never gone down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard borates help a lot with aeration, but I also haven't used them much. So I know a couple guys that really believe in it. But
it's also difficult because now that we're keeping the pH down on that, we're pumping so much acid into it that the alkalinity is just plummeting.
Right.
You know, and then so now we have our opposite of the issue. We have a corrosive water balance, which is going to destroy the exchanger.
Right.
So we're going to either rot the exchanger out or we're going to scale it.
Right.
And it's just
got to keep it balanced.
Yeah. That's where the real balance of water comes into play. You know, so it's definitely one that was noteworthy for me, that was new, that I haven't had to deal with. I mean, I've dealt with a clogged exchanger, but nothing that did that in like a couple of weeks.
Yeah. What is, what are some of the most like common, things that go wrong with heaters that you can figure out pretty quickly that, you know, they're just common that maybe a lot of people miss that, you know, you're able to like kind of find out right away?
Safety switches. So you go through the safety switch loop, and they're all electrical switches that are either normally open or normally closed. So like, for instance, a pressure switch is normally open. It's not closed unless there's water pressure. So then it'll close. Same with limit switches. They're normally closed. And if they overheat hot water inside the exchanger, it's going to open, disconnect the electrical circuit. So this is where we were talking about a voltmeter is important, because you can just go through each switch and like determine like, is my pressure switch open or closed? It's closed. Okay, not my pressure switch. And then you just go from switch to switch, and it's really easy to determine issues with those when you have diagnosed several in the past and you're in and out. Or determine why a switch is open or closed or failed or shut the heater off for whatever reason. Which could then give you the knowledge you need to know is like, why my heater's off. It may not be a problem with the switch, but the switch is actually identifying an issue that you need to know as a user to address. For instance, like a pressure switch can be closed below grade and the heater will remain on with no water flow. You can use a flow switch instead. So things like that. You just know why a switch is on or off.
Right. Dude, that's amazing. Dude, I could tell you. You know that stuff like the back of your hand. I'm curious because this time of year, everybody's probably getting these calls. My heater isn't working. My pool, my spa isn't heating up. Like, what is usually, if that's me calling you as the homeowner, like, what are your first steps like over the phone? Like, you don't probably want to go out there right away.
Sure. Of course not. You don't want to waste a trip. And sometimes I feel like trips are wasted when they're simple issues, or I'll just no charge because it's like something simple. Obviously I'll ask like, is it automated? And then try and get access to their automation via my phone.
Like, oh, wow.
That's, you know, like, and make sure that they did it right. Because a lot of the time they've got the heater on, but they forgot to put the pool pump on and it just never went on, or they didn't schedule it according to the certain times or just something so simple that homeowners will never grasp, but then I can just look to, or you know, for instance, like iAqualink, like you can log on and then they can log on too and witness you moving on the web. So you can teach them while on speakerphone, like pool heater, set temperature on or schedule, so they can watch you do it and you don't have to go out there and do that. Hmm. But that's definitely one thing I look at, like make sure that they're using it right. And then go out, perform a service call.
Right. You're not charging them to do that over the phone?
No, not typically. But sometimes these are repeat customers and,
sure,
you know, you do something like that, immediately you're in their phone forever. And
right.
Then when something does go, you're the first person to get a call.
Yeah.
It seems like you can move through that process a little bit faster than most people because you're very familiar. Like, you know that if it is automated or how old, you know, is the equipment. You have any idea how old the heater is? Fairly new, super old. I have no idea. I think I have automation. Can you send me pictures? Mm-hmm. You know, all those different things, mm-hmm. you know, because we're always constantly trying to not go there until we know for sure we need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I'll just disclose that with people too. I'm like, hey, if this is something dumb, like I'm going to bill you a service call. And they're usually like, okay, that's fine. We just want it working, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, pictures, FaceTime, like you can get the information that you need to know before you like run a call. And that's what I run all my business stuff off a cell phone, and previous companies with the office staff, it's probably different, but they would print a piece of paper, send a technician out, and it was just a huge waste of time. Like when you could literally just like FaceTime them and be like, hey, that button, that's the heater button, or that's your jets button, and right. We're done.
Yeah.
You know,
I think a lot of the heater stuff too is a lot of that basic that wasn't programmed right. Or I always ask them the last time the filter was cleaned, because a lot of times it's a flow issue.
Sure.
I mean, that's basic stuff. Or if they have a DE filter, you can just backwash it, or sand filter, just backwash it,
mm-hmm.
and it works. I mean, that's kind of a lot of the basic stuff. You can fix some of that over the phone, but.
Sure. Running through backwash. Absolutely.
Then you get into the more complicated switches stuff, but you know, the master temp. So I think that's why everybody likes it, because it's got those lights in the back.
Yeah.
That kind of walk you through those.
Exactly.
Switches, which is
exactly
different than the other heaters.
So, but like you said, if it needs a pool filter clean or something like that, still service call, still a valid yeah. reason to show up, clean it. And yeah. then in addition to getting it to fire, like I'll run like a service call on the heater and just like pull it apart, blow it out of the shop vac, make sure it's not full of cobwebs, and just make a service call. Like right. it needs to be done, but it's not a reason for someone to come out, but then you can just kind of incorporate the two together and make it like feel more valuable to the homeowner.
Yep.
Than a simple fix. And
I think that's where a lot of the repair guys go wrong. You know, they just walk out, no,
fix it,
it's works, and leave. And the customer's like, well, you just charged me $150 to do nothing. Right. Whereas if you do what you just said, where you clean it up, you know, make sure the cobwebs are gone, you know, do extra stuff like that, that doesn't take much longer. One, you make them feel like they paid for something, and two, you made it worth your time, where you actually sure. got the charge for your time.
Or you make sure you didn't miss something and then yeah, have too. A callback and
yep. Yep.
an obsessed customer. I mean, I know in HVAC, they run a, you know, yearly by yearly call like that, where they'll go and they'll like, make sure the contact to screws are tight, make sure all the terminal screws or terminals are tight, and like mm-hmm. check the capacitors and like do, you know, clean the coils and just vacuum the stuff out. And like, they don't really do much, but like they made sure like it's not having an issue, which is great. Like in the pool industry, I've noticed there's nobody, like you could literally run heater tune-ups all day long.
Yep.
If you had the clients.
Evaluations or yep. And I think that's valuable, super, super, you know, cause in the markets that you're dealing with Paradise Valley and up North Scottsdale, where they have money and they, like we talked about, where the trades just come work for them before they get home. Like those people care about one thing, that when I press that button, it turns on.
Yeah. Or it's like, hot when I get off.
Yeah,
the plane.
It's hot when I get off the plane. Yeah. Like they don't mind paying for that stuff, and it's valuable, you know, to those certain markets, and not every market, like, you know, when you're Tucson basic pool with no, that, it's probably not as valuable to those people, but
no,
when you're certain markets, it's definitely a service worth charging and worth knowing.
100%. And I mean, it's easy because it's not a terribly expensive call,
right?
To run a shop back through heater or clean out the breaker panel or something, you know, like it's not like you're asking for thousands of dollars, like right. In comparison to like running your service route where you're like billing per clean stop. Like you can run same amount of time, clean up a couple of heaters that you did vacuuming a pool and charge three or four times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Easy.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say though, cause you know, heater season, whatever, but a lot of people have heaters on their routes.
Mm-hmm.
So is there something that, you know, people should be doing on like a quarterly, you know, annual basis? You know, obviously you might have a tree over the heat or something like that. Maybe,
yeah.
You know, you, cause I think where homeowners get frustrated is when you keep figuring things out and it's not bundled up and it feels like you're being nickel and dimed like every 2 seconds. But if you figure out like what all this pool needs, and you just kind of like one lump sum every, 6 months or however you structure it and not, sure. You know, there's something weird and different every invoice, every month. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's difficult to maneuver considering like there are so many different things that are going to fail, but you could definitely incorporate like a heater clean.
And what goes into that?
Well, just pull the cover off and just vacuum it out. Vacuum out where all the controls are, all the gas valve and the burner tray, and pull off the top and like look at the exchanger and inspect it. Like, is there sitting? Is it dirty? Is there a tree above it that's dropped a whole tree into my heater?
Right.
You know, and you turn it on and it's going to soot and then fail. And then you're going to be looking at major repairs. And there's definitely a market for putting that in just as frequently as like cartridge cleans. And that doesn't take anything except for a shop vac. A couple screwdrivers. You could incorporate that in a pool cleaning route if it's your first year on the job and do cartridge cleans, filter tune-ups, you know, clean pools.
Heater evaluations.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like make sure it's good.
When somebody wants a new heater, do you look at the landscape of the backyard? Like if there's a big tree right over where the heater needs to go, do you have a preference for something like that? Or is it going based on maybe the automation or something?
Like a brand choice, you mean? Or like,
yeah, brand
like
and model.
A different unit? Not necessarily. All of them are designed to keep outside debris out. I'd go more toward like the homeowner and say like, hey, like this tree's overhanging, like this tree's got to go. You know, because eventually like all these exhausts on the heaters is going to clog. But like, if it's not cleaned off, like no one's going to do it unless it's, you know, the pool guy, or get rid of the tree, you know, or cut it back.
Or tell the landscaper to stop blowing all this shit over here. This is not a trash can.
Blowing it into the pool area.
Yeah. Typical.
Well, I think to your point, I think they also get upset because they think they're paying you for a service. And if you never turn on anything, like that's what they get upset about, is like every time they want to use something, it doesn't work because you never tested it. Right. So I personally think you should at least fire the heater, you know, every month or every couple months to make sure it's running and it can actually do its job. Otherwise when the time comes, they're just going to, you never told me it was wrong. And you have that awkward conversation of like, oh yeah, my guy never tests it. Or when their lights go out, same thing. Like pool guys don't test lights. When's the last time technicians go down and press the light button? You know, so like that kind of incorporating that kind of stuff, I think makes it big. You and I did. I mean, I don't think our technicians did that on every service, you know, or once a week or month or, you know, whatever. Or even if it's a salt pool, like when you clean the salt cell, like test the stuff, you know, I don't know. Use that time to your advantage where you're already standing there, like test the lights, you know, do something like that. But that's really what they get annoyed at, I think, when you're dealing with customers, is they think they're paying you, you know, whatever, $150 a month. That should be making sure that their stuff runs. And most of the time it's not. It's just like paying for cleaning.
But like you were saying, you know, doing things the right way, when you actually earn really good customers and they're willing to pay,
mm-hmm.
like You need to go above and beyond on those accounts. You know, the ones where we tested lights each week and the features and maybe the fire bowl or, you know, all these different things and letting them know through, you know, the service software that yes, indeed, all of these features are working. Everything is good. So that when it comes time to make some type of repair, there's no question about it because you've been so diligent about letting them know what's working. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of time before, you know, these things don't last forever. But it's like when you get good clients and customers that, you know, are on board with what you do, you gotta go through all those steps for sure.
Sure. And finding those customers is pretty easy, you know, when you do perform those steps and like check on things and they're running their heaters and their lights every night and like they just want it to work, you know, and typically if there's issues and we're here to fix it. And I think finding the difficulties is where the houses where they never do anything, like where you've got this elaborate equipment pad and the only thing that runs is the filter pump. So then you have to take the responsibility on the technician to like come out, like run everything, especially if you're like putting it on a pool cleaner, like, okay, like turn everything on. Like some of those dudes might be intimidated to like go down the aux line and like turn all the fire bowls and deck jets. And like, they're not sure what they're actually doing. They're just hitting buttons.
Oh shit. I just saw the garage open. Is this, what does this one do?
Yeah.
You're right. Towards the end, we did have several clients that we did test that for, but I think we charged for it, right? You know, their service was a higher charge and we made sure the technicians actually did test that stuff and put in the notes. So yeah. I think it's a different level of service somewhat where their expectations are set the right way and, you know, we're responsible for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how you make money though. How you going to know what's broken?
Yeah.
And when it comes for game day, you know, when they want to heat their spa or pool, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, what do you said, do? As long as you document it, you know, then you have the proof that it was working all these weeks and now it doesn't work. You know, now there's money to be made there. But if you don't ever document it and they never know anything about it, all of a sudden the heater doesn't work. And you're like, well, you just cleaned the pool yesterday. What'd you do to it?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
then you're on the burner and it's last minute because they got in Thanksgiving weekend and the heater's not on. And now I need you to come fix it right now.
Yep. Distribution's Wednesday. Not open and
so
you got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that good point touching on that, just turn the stuff on, figure out what it does, learn how to turn it on. It's super important.
So this day and age, where do you see the best place to become more educated, not exactly just like contacting, you know, people like yourself, but are there other things that, you know, people can do, you know, kind of on their leisure time if they can find it, things to be reading and watching?
Sure. I mean, just the internet, YouTube, that's huge. If you don't utilize those things, like, you're not going to teach yourself anything. I mean, you can't ask people to come teach you and to get into like the automation and heaters and stuff. There's not very much pool education out there, but like you could spend time on YouTube on like HVAC, for instance, learn heat pumps. Same things are going to apply. Safety switches, furnaces for homes. They're very similar. And just basic electrical. If you can figure out how a light bulb lights up, you can understand like a motor circuit. You've got switches, you've got, you know, an on off and load, line and load, like, and an appliance, motor or a bulb or whatever. Like you can teach yourself like basics just from the internet, you know, and like take those into more complex classes. Like if you go to Home and Garden or Pentair show and like know like why you're asking a question, I guess that would help.
Yeah. I like when you said that the other night, when I was talking to you about how you kind of expanded beyond the pool industry, YouTube stuff, and got into the other industries that do things, you know, more professionally and more, and how you correlated the two together. Like, you know, it's very similar. It's just a different name or a different company makes it, but it's a similar, very, you know, product.
Yeah. And I was the other night, we were touch base on like the, RS-45, like it's industrial control protocol for communication. And that's now in pool automation, you know, and controls all of our various devices, drives, you know, heat pumps with heat cool options, anything that's going to go into all the controllers, all the screen logic, all the home automation. That's a whole other world, you know, going through iLink adapters or serial adapters or preparing your pool system for Crestron or Savant or Control 4, any of the home controllers will use those communication protocols. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is this? Like, where do I learn? And I found that industrial controls has been using it forever, you know, and researched that. And then it got in me into more like network and basically went down a bunch of rabbit holes of like, I don't know what I'm looking at, but I'm asking questions mm-hmm. and learn through industrial sites instead of trying to find like what pool guy out there knows what this is.
Right.
You know, cause I couldn't find anything.
You ain't gonna find it.
That's the easy way out. And it's not very respectful. The respectful thing to do is to become more knowledgeable about these things. And it's better for you. Cause when you're actually going through training, you actually have a better understanding of like, oh, I remember seeing that, you know, part in the manual. I remember that guy trying to explain this. It's so much easier to have that conversation than trying to reach out for help and like needing, you know, to know everything. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, just a respectful thing to do.
But I like how you mentioned tech support. Cause I think if you talk to manufacturers, they all talk about tech support, but very few people in the industry itself, I think, utilize that to what it's worth. And maybe it goes back to that same thing, being too prideful to get help or ask questions on the phone. But that's what that's designed for. Like you said, people are getting paid to like teach you that stuff. And we went to Pentair's facility. Like they have every automation hanging on the wall for those people to look at with you. You know, they may not be as technical as some of us in the field are, or you are especially, but you can.
And most of them were ex-repair mechanics or in the pool service industry. Like a lot of them were like in the field and they, you know, really know that stuff.
Yeah. Definitely reaching out to the manufacturers is a no-brainer. Finding other, you know, skills you can Google or teach yourself or like come from another trade or actually apply another trade. You know, if you're an electrician and you get into pool automation, you're obviously going to be better than the guy who's cleaning pools who got an automation.
Right.
Like you're going to understand. But what's difficult is like when you call tech support and you don't have a voltmeter and you don't know what a motor circuit is or like what 240 volts is. They almost can't help.
Right.
Because it's like, well, do you have voltage at your motor? Well, I don't know. Which is, you know, so that's like things like tech support can't teach you. So that's why I was like, when I first bought my first meter, it was like, I taught myself what a meter does and how to test voltage.
There's a lot of videos on that, like how to use voltmeters, because that's electrician trade. You know, there's a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
But everybody's been there.
Like, everybody's been
there. You didn't know everything in the very beginning, you know? No. So it's important to do like what you just said is like getting that meter and figuring out how to use it for what it's going to be applied for.
But I remember I've heard that from thousands of manufacturers. If they don't have a voltmeter, like there's not much.
Yeah.
You can't go very far. Mark Hernandez used to tell us all the time. Do you have your voltmeter out? Nope. Don't got it still, bro. Like, sorry.
Yeah. And you're helpless. And so tech support's going to be like, well, call me back when you got one.
Yeah, go buy a voltmeter.
Yeah. Like, what, you know, and so, and same with like the classes that are prepared for the controls around it. Like, you're just not going to be able to grasp as much as you should without basic electrical knowledge or basic plumbing knowledge or like basic HVAC knowledge, you know, for the heaters. So,
speaking of automation, you have any, because you probably sat next to equipment for like hours at a time. You have like anything for like organizing like nuts and bolts or like what you sit on or, you know, just these like little things that you're always there and you're like, man, I wish there was somewhere to put this or I wish there was somewhere to sit or I wish.
Sure. Milwaukee packouts, man. Those are great. They're a bench and you can organize with them. Like,
oh, seriously?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, bench? They're tall. Well, it's a dolly and.
Oh, wait, is it made to be a bench? You're a little lighter. You're a little lighter than us.
I'll sit on the packouts all day though, especially if you're wiring a panel, like you're going to be there for a couple hours. Like, and then.
Is that the one where you can add to it?
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of adapters and boxes. It's basically just like an organizer that's clips to itself and you can just stack them all up. And then the bottom one's a dolly. So you can just dolly in your whole setup.
Dude, Milwaukee makes such a quality product. Like everything they have is cool. Like,
just I love durable. Those. Love those.
It's a good one. What about, do you have anything for organize? I've seen like magnetic, you know, like trays, mm-hmm. like if you want to put your hardware in, or are you just that good? You just know where all the nuts and bolts are at all times.
No, typically they're just right on top of what I'm working on, right. Whether it be the panel, the wall, the heater, like, you know, do my best not to lose them. Cause I'm sure we've all been there in a gravel backyard with
yeah,
one of the panel bolts missing and
you're, so there you go. Maybe have backups with you. I don't, do you keep like
yeah,
hardware?
I've got like a junk drawer in one of the packouts pretty much and save, mm-hmm. save things.
Say being like a bike guy, you might have some bike hardware that can, that can be put in those holes.
Sure.
So how can people reach out to you if they want to get a hold of you?
Feel free to text me and call me. Cell number is 520-461-8121. And, or my Instagram, it's pulling around AZ and should be able to find it, you know?
That's a bold move. You're the only second person to ever put out their phone number.
Let's hear it. Let's see what you got.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Pat. It's been a real pleasure talking with you. You're very knowledgeable and look forward to having you back and, you know, just watching what you do in the future.
Yeah. Great to be here, man. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Pool Chasers. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. To connect with today's guests, including pictures, links, and resources from everything discussed today, you can visit the episode page at poolchasers.com or click the links below. To connect more with us, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter by searching at Pool Chasers. If you would like to support the podcast, the easiest and most effective way is to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, as well as share the show or your favorite episode with a friend or on social media. Also, you can get early access to each episode by supporting us through Patreon. We know your time is valuable, so thank you for sharing some of yours with us today.
See you out there, Pool Chasers.